You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Here's a story to hearten emerging writers. Emer McBride spent 9 years trying to get her first novel, A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing, published. But after it was finally picked up, it won the Bailey's Women's Prize for Fiction, that's formerly the Orange Prize, beating out famous authors like Donna Tartt and Jhumpa Lahiri. It's published in this country by Coffee House Press, and I'm very pleased to welcome Emer McBride to our show today. Welcome.
Hello, thank you.
One of the most striking things about this novel is your narrative style, fragments, scrambled syntax, lack of commas, occasional interior rhymes, wordplay. Why did you choose that approach? Was that there from the start?
It sort of was. I mean, I wanted early on to see if I could give the reader a different kind of reading experience. And, you know, in order to do that, I had to think of a different narrative perspective. And I wanted to write in a way that the reader would feel completely complicit in what was happening to the main character.
You're trying to give us a sense of the narrator's psychological experience.
Yeah, absolutely. But more than the psychological experience, the whole internal physical experience as well, and all at the same time.
What came first, the form or the character?
Both came at the same time, and they became completely inextricable for me.
So you found that voice, and then everything just flowed.
Well, I wouldn't say it flowed, but I felt as though I was sticking my head in a beehive for a long time.
Did the publishers turn it down so that they saw this as perhaps a little too difficult for most readers?
Yeah, that was one of the main reasons. They felt also that it wouldn't fit into any easy marketing niche because of the style, and unfortunately, they didn't think that readers were up to doing a little bit of work.
And what did you say to them?
I said, I think you were wrong. And I stuck by my guns. And they said, fine, you stick to your guns over there on your own for 9 years.
And now a few of them, I'm sure, are regretting that they didn't pick up the book.
I certainly hope so.
Could you read a little section for us so that we can get a sense of the flavor of the prose?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just read from the opening. For you, you'll give her name. In the stitches of her skin she'll wear your say. Mammy me, yes you, pants the bed I'd say that's what you did. Then lay you down, they cut you round, wait and hour and day. Walking up corridors up the stairs, are you all right? Will you sit, he says. No, I want, she says, I want to see my son. Smell from Dettol through her skin, mops, diamond floor tiles all astrong. All to burn your eyes out if you had some. Her heart going pat, going dum, dum, dum. Don't mind me, she's going to your room. See the Jesus, what have they done? Jesus, bile for titles, burn, shh, all over. Mother, she cries, oh no, no, no.
Well, that sounds almost like poetry at times. Have you written poetry?
I haven't, but, you know, I kind of think there's no harm in trying to steal back what poetry has for prose.
You've discussed being inspired after you read James Joyce's Ulysses. What was it about Ulysses that made your novel feel suddenly urgent?
Well, I think reading that book, I suddenly understood that I could do anything that I wanted. And for some reason, I hadn't understood that the novel was capable of that before.
Was that before you read Finnegan's Wake?
Well, that's a whole different kind of everything can go, I suppose.
Many Irish writers cite Joyce as a major influence. Why Joyce rather than a number of other major Irish writers? There have been quite a few.
I suppose because, you know, he's a monster in terms of what he did to form and language. But also there's a humanity and a warmth there that maybe people find harder to find in someone like Beckett, say.
Mm-hmm. But there is a sense of the stream of consciousness that both Joyce and Beckett employed at times.
Well, you know, that was certainly the jumping off point for me with this. And I wanted to see if I could take it further and use that in a different way.
What was the long process of getting this novel published like? Did you revise it over the years or did you just keep trying?
No, I wrote it very quickly in 6 months in 2003, 2004 and did 3 drafts and then I didn't look at it again for another 9 years.
Everyone seems to be fascinated by that long road to get this book published. It's even on your book jacket. Are you tired of talking about it?
Well, I'm certainly tired of living it.
Who is this narrator? She addresses a youth throughout the novel that we quickly realize is her brother. Did you know from the beginning that her life would be somehow defined by him and the fact that he's brain damaged because he had a brain tumor?
Well, as soon as I happened upon the first words of the novel, I understood that that would be the central relationship of the novel. And everything came from that point on.
And then there's her relationship with her single mother. The narrator's portrait of her mother and her uncle, both abusive in different ways, is quite distinct.
Yes, well, I think they work in counterpoint for a lot of things that I really wanted to talk about and to talk about in terms of Ireland, especially at that time, and the Catholic Church, and also the sort of the hidden tales of abuse that went on there.
Well, you say about that time, the setting of a novel feels somewhat timeless, although there are details here that place it in the 1980s. Did you purposely want to keep it somewhat unmarked and timeless?
Yeah, I really wanted to see if I could set it outside of time as much as possible. I wanted to make the whole story seem as universal as I could.
Does it resemble the Ireland you grew up in?
Yes, it certainly does.
The way the narrator talks about her uncle is incredibly nuanced, despite the fact that he's sexually abused her when she was an adolescent. Why would she continue to have relations with him after she's become an adult?
I think it's for her, it's a way of trying to gain control over her own sexuality and to have some control over that experience, that early experience where she, you know, was completely without control. And it's her way of punishing him as well.
You told The Guardian that, and I'm quoting, "I thought, oh God, don't be the Irish writer who's writing about child abuse. I really didn't want to, but it seems I had to." Why did
yes.
you have to?
Well, you know, I tried very hard not to write about that. But I think, you know, writers write about what they understand, and that, you know, is certainly part of the Irish experience and part of the cultural landscape.
And the narrator is often thinking of or haunted by sin, also part of the Irish experience?
Absolutely, and very much more at that time in the late 80s and early 90s.
Did you find yourself encountering other themes in Irish literature, whether you wanted to or not?
Well, you know, I think there's sex, there's death, there's religion, there's guilt. I think there's all the good stuff of Irish literature in there.
And there's a lot of sex in here.
There is.
Sex is a weapon.
Yes. And I wanted to write about female sexuality in a different way, in which the girl is not looking for love. She's not looking for to be healed by love and passion, and actually has a much more complex relationship to her own sexuality as a result of her early experiences.
She sets out on sexual conquest that are revenge on the boys who have bullied her brother.
Yeah, because
again, because sexuality and power can be linked together.
Yeah, I think so, and they certainly are for most men. And I wanted to see how that would look if you transpose that.
Because a lot of writers have talked about just how difficult it is to write about sex.
It is. It's hard because, you know, personally, it's quite awkward and you feel quite shy about writing about that. But it's such a huge part of life. And it's so often written about in a very sentimental way, which doesn't seem true to me. And so it seems, you know, it's something that's important to try and look at more honestly.
In an interview for The Telegraph, you said that the advent of the internet makes it so that the purpose of the novel has to change. Can you talk about that a bit?
Well, you know, I think publishers have been very anxious about what's happening in publishing, and we're nervous about what happened to the music industry as a result of the internet. And in a way, I think the internet has taken away a lot of the traditional role of the novel. You know, there's no need to explain different types of people's lives to each other. We can look that up on the internet, and
they're all blogging it.
Exactly, it's all there to see. And if you want to know what a sunset looks like in Tahiti, you can just click online. But you know what the novel can do that nothing else can do is delve into the human soul, into the human experience, and language needs to be used in a different way to make that more realizable.
During those 9 years, this book was being rejected before it was published to acclaim. Were you writing other things?
Yeah, about 5 years in, I put the Girl is a Half Formed Thing into the drawer, and I started working on my second novel, which was quite tricky with the weight of failure sitting on me. But
you didn't despair.
I did despair, but I'm a writer before I'm a despairer. so I kept writing anyway.
And the second novel is complete?
It's nearly complete. It should have been complete this year, but you know, I'm in New York instead.
Here talking about your novel.
Exactly.
And I thank you so much for coming. Oh, first of all, before we finish, the title, A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing. What do you mean that to suggest to the reader?
Well, I think
who's very, picking up this book?
Yeah, very literally, a woman is a fully formed thing, so a girl is halfway there, and thing speaks to female objectification, and the novel is certainly a lot about that.
People have described the sex here as self-effacing. That's part of the girl being a half-formed thing.
I think so. I mean, when your first sexual experience is one of abuse, that is going to change everything you feel about your own sexuality for a long time.
You you grew up in Ireland, but you live in England. Now, Edna O'Brien moved to England because she wanted to write about sex and found out that that got her a lot of hate mail. Is that a problem for you as well?
No, Ireland's changed a lot, and I don't feel the need to run away from there. I think, you know, she blazed that trail, and now I can be gratefully safe in the light of it.
The book is A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing. Your name, I've never seen this name before, E-I-M-E-A-R. Is that a common name in Ireland?
It's quite common, Emer.
Ed McBride, I know, is a common name.
Yes.
And the book is published in this country by Coffee House Press. It is the winner of the Bailey's Women's Prize for Fiction 2014. It used to be called the Orange Prize.
That's
many
right.
People will recognize that name.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you very much for having me.